Internet, and welcome to another episode of All My Issues. In this episode, episode number 50. That's right, 50. We have a special guest. That special guest is the multi-talented comic book creator, Todd Johnson. You would know Todd Johnson for being one of the co-creators for the best-selling comic book featuring an all-African-American supergroup, and that comic book is called Tribe. So, without further ado, let's get started. I'm Rick.
I'm Sam.
I'm Chris. Today we are joined with our special guest, Todd Johnson, best-selling comic book author and co-creator of the million-plus selling Tribe Comics.
There we go. Very good intro, Chris.
Woo! Thank you.
Love it.
All right. Now let's get into the groove of this podcast here. So usually we start off with like a kind of a little icebreaker type of question. And that question is, if you were to have one superpower, no matter what it would be, why would you have that superpower and what would it be?
I would like to be like Professor Xavier to read minds. It'd be a great advantage in business and any kind of strategy you had to do in life.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a first, I think. I don't think anyone's ever said that.
Yeah. Plus, I think with his power, you could do a little pushing too.
Oh yeah, that's for sure, for sure.
Like, honey, I want you to make meatloaf.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm a marketer, so everything would be like, "This is the best selling. Buy it because I said so."
You know, you like my socks. Buy my socks.
That's right.
My socks.
Obey me. You are in my power.
Yeah, I guess we could just move along. And one of the other questions we usually ask people is, what got you started in the business?
Basically, I started out on the retail side of the business. I owned about four retail shops in the Detroit area, and it just seemed like a natural progression to start throwing comic shows to not only meet the creators that I wanted to meet and actually promote my comic shops on a retail level, up your game a little bit. So in the meantime of throwing these shows, I met tons of artists and writers that are still friends today, but one of them happened to be Larry Stroman. Larry Stroman was on Alien Legion at the time, which then transitioned into X-Factor. And from there, it kind of transitioned into the friendship with Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld, all his peers that were on the X books at the time. So when they all jumped ship and went over and started Image Comics, they started kind of plundering Marvel for all the other people that were on best-selling books. Larry happened to be one of them. So he gave me a call and asked me, did I want to participate in his comic? And that's really how it started. Pure luck.
That is amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. Because we were wondering, amongst ourselves, we were wondering how you got started.
Pure luck. I would like to say it was all, my great writing. I turned into Marvel Comics and all this kind of stuff. Mine was strictly right place at the right time, knowing a lot of the creators and, exchanging stories. I mean, Larry didn't even have any knowledge in the beginning that I was even a writer. I mean, I've always written in, high school and college and all that sort of thing. But, just us talking about comics all the time, we just shared a lot of the same interests and the same likes and dislikes of the current comics, and he just thought it would be a good fit. We were already friends, and he flew to Detroit and said, hey, guess what? Jim Lee said such and such. You want to start working on something? We said, sure. So we just kind of just started brainstorming of all the type of characters we like. A lot of it, very typical stuff. You want a speed guy, and you want a guy that can turn into multiple things, or a stretch guy, or fire guy. We're a bunch of comic nerds. We all like some of the same stuff. I mean, if you look at all comics, it's still based on, the four elements or flight or underwater. It's all the same stuff. You just have to do your little take and your little slant on it.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's always a guy that's like super strong or or something.
Like yeah, that. It's always the genius billionaire mechanic guy with the armor. There's always somebody that something spilled or he drank something or a magical bolt. I mean, there's not a lot of ways to go. All you can do is very cool variations. I mean, it's the same thing as like, do you like Shazam or do you like Miracle Man? It's the same guy.
Yeah.
You know, or Icon and Superman and Hyperion and Sentry. They're all the same. You have to just come with different slants on it.
Gotcha. Yeah. I agree with you.
So mine is all luck, to be honest. I'd like to give you guys a great story, but it's all strictly a right place, right time, and just a good fit with working with a friend.
Yeah. That is a great story.
That's the best story.
Yeah.
That's life right there.
Yeah, exactly. All the pieces fell together at the right time.
Well, you know, probably the main thing that I brought to the tribe thing or any comics that I've worked on is not necessarily the writing part or anything like that. Not that I don't like my own writing or anything, but it's like my strongest attribute is really marketing, you know, because I have a marketing company, I have a marketing background. So half of the comic thing is you could be the greatest comic artist or writer or inker or colorist in the world, but if nobody wants to buy it or nobody knows about it, you're stuck. So marketing has always been one of me and Larry's very strong suits that we get out there and kind of promote, like P.T. Barnum back when we were doing Tribe in the beginning. We kind of paved the way for a lot of things, the way things are done, as setting up your own booth. I mean, back then, a lot of artists just sat at a table or they went to the only people that had the big booths were the big major companies. We kind of just, you know, said, we're going to have all that stuff for ourselves. You know, we bought a big booth and we came out with T-shirts and hats and stickers and buttons. And we just went bananas, you know, and it just worked out. I mean, part of, you know, people like to always say it's because that you're with a particular company that a comic sells, whether it be Image or Dark Horse or, you know, the big two, Marvel or DC. But if that was the case, then why isn't everything selling the same big numbers? Why do some things sell big and some things get canceled because they're not selling enough? It has to be something else than just, you know, you're with these popular companies or you own these popular characters. It has to be the marketing or the creators or something you put behind it. So if you look out there, even right now, there's certain creators that have a little more pizzazz than somebody else. When you guys go to a lot of shows, so I'm sure you see the creators that just sit at their table, tic-tacking on their phone or looking down or talking to their girlfriend or whatever. And then you see the guys that are up there really trying to sell something and trying to draw people to the table and tell stories and tell you about their product or something. It makes a difference.
Yeah, I can. I'm just going to make the assumption that that's how you got to a million copies sold.
Oh, we did. We threw everything at it, but the kitchen sink. I mean, we actually called retailers. We set up our own tour. I mean, you have to remember too, this is the early 90s. This is before, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and all these kind of things that really leveled the playing field. You had to get on the telephone, you know, and call people, and you had to try to find where these stores were, their lists. You couldn't just tic-tac, you know, comic stores in Ohio on Google, and it gives you a big old list. I mean, we had to get in the streets, get in the cars. We did almost every show known to man, and we would fly out to these shows. A lot of times we'd put ourselves in the hotel. We'd buy tables because sometimes people assume when they see a lot of people on the schedule for shows, they think that all these guys are like guests. Sometimes these shows don't want to book you. So you got to book yourself, you know, pay for a hotel going out there. Just get on that show because the more people you meet, the more, you know, sales opportunities you have.
That's very true.
It's like politics. You have to press the flesh.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I have a quick strange question just to throw in there. So you were living in Michigan. Where was Larry living at the time of Tribe Comic?
When Tribe Comics came out, Larry was in Brooklyn, New York. And I had flown him to a couple of shows here from New York.
So my question, because I hadn't really thought about this before until we started talking and you were talking about technology changing. Like, I know how the business is going today. So how does that go about with, you know, you live in one place, him live in another, you know, words and art. Do you have to mail things? Did you have to, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, was it like over the phone or, you know?
We were a lot of things we would talk on the phone. A lot of times Larry would just fly down or I would fly there. What happened for the most part, this was right at the advent. If you guys, I don't know how old you guys are, but do you remember the early days of the first fax machines?
Oh, yeah.
They had a roll of like almost like thermal paper, and you'd sit there and dial and you'd hear it going, you know, and this thing would start rolling, rolling off this roll. It was terrible. So back then we would do some of the primitive like drawings, like the early sketches and thumbnails that Larry would do. He would fax, you know, he would fax that over. And the same thing with early script things and script ideas. And the rest of it was more, we would really flesh out most of it talking on the phone, laughing about, oh, wouldn't it be cool if the character, you know, you had a big robot and you pull, you know, every time he's in a fight, his head falls off like Rock'em Sock'em Robot. Yeah, or wouldn't it be cool that you had this girl that was the strongest person on the team and she had a big, enormous ass. You know, it's like, you know, you just, all that was just conversation of joking back and forth about what would shock people or what would be funny or things we liked when we were coming up as a kid. We started out saying that we were going to come up with 200 characters, you know, obviously because we only put out 4 issues, we never really got to all the things that we wanted to do, but we laid out the format to put 200 characters in the comic, both, you know, heroes and villains. So we would come up with the most odd things. We have a killer assassin guy that looks like James Brown, and he doesn't even really have a name, but they people call him Mr. Please, 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 because people are always begging him, please, please, please don't kill me. You know, we have a guy that basically his big brother was a super villain arsonist that got killed in a big superhero fight. So the brother tried to take over after that, but he's kind of a liar, you know, kind of like a Turk in Daredevil. Do you remember Frank Miller's Turk character?
No, I do not.
Okay. Well, he's just like your typical snivelly, you know, snitchy type of guy, but he's always telling the stories like he's this big time villain. But he has this costume, but because the costume was damaged in the fight, he doesn't know how to work it. So the only thing that flames on is the pants. And so his name is Liar Liar Pants on Fire.
Oh, that is awesome.
Because all he does is lie. And every time he starts lying, somebody, you know, he tries to fight and stuff, and only the pants. Like, so a lot of stupid stuff and a lot of just funny stuff that we think is funny. You know, half the things when you're doing creativity things, you think people are always trying to entertain you. But the first person you need to entertain is yourself. Because if it's not funny or good to you, it's kind of like being a comedian. A comedian writes jokes, but they first write jokes that their own family and friends think are funny. And then they try to, you know, give it to you. They don't just start trying new material out there. Hey, there was a dog and a fox and they walked into a bar. You know, they've probably already tried it, you know, and that's how comics works a little bit, too. You kind of flesh it out the way you like things. And then, you know, hopefully you find an audience for it, whether it be small or big. You know, it's not always about can you sell a million copies. Sometimes it's just can you creatively get out what you want to do and have fun doing it? And of course, make a little money on the way. That's always good because you listen. You know, it's always interesting to me to hear these new Jack guys on Facebook and stuff. It's always the guys that sell 10 comics always talking about, oh, it's not about sales or money. I do this for the love and for the art and stuff. It's like, come on, dude. But if you could sell 100,000 copies, wouldn't you prefer that?
Yeah.
You know, don't get so high on your horse that we're not all out here trying to make a living or making the best business, that this still is the comic business. Now, yes, you're doing what you love, but you would like to sell more. If you don't try to, you know, poo-poo everybody else's attempts at trying to do the same, you know?
Right.
You owned, you said 4 comic book shops?
Yeah, they were called the Comics Cafe. They were all in the outskirts of Detroit, Michigan, like the closest suburbs of Detroit. I had one in Detroit near a major university, Wayne State, which is Detroit's main large university in the city. And the rest of them were all in the suburban outskirts. So I started out with one and it just kind of grew from there. But with comics, Detroit had a strange market where all the retail comics were all being sold at 20% off cover. So there wasn't a big wide margin after you bought it from Diamond and Capital at the time.
Yeah.
And none of the stores seemed to understand that. I would talk to these stores, you know, and obviously from a marketing standpoint of your peers, you say, if we are all selling at 20% off, there's no advantage. So we might as well just all be selling at full price.
Yeah,
but everybody was always scared to, oh, if I go back to full price, he's just going to keep it 20 and take my customers. So it was a silly market here.
Wow.
And then you know, like I said, I transitioned into trying to throw the shows because I always thought that throwing the shows and trying to do something bigger would be the best way to go. You know, I kind of always wanted to do my own little comic and stuff. And, you know, that's exactly what it would have been, a little comic. But I lucked up and hooked up with Lair. And then we lucked up and hit Image Comics right in the heyday of that 1992-93, just pretty much just full comic collecting, speculation, everything, investment explosion. You know, you whatever reason people were buying so many comics back then, we were right on the cusp of that to be able to enjoy a huge, you know, wave of sales and attention that was going on with those books at that time. You had Valiant that was going crazy at the time, Image. You had the stuff coming out from Dark Horse, like the Aliens Predator movie properties and Star Wars. You had Marvel putting out, you know, Wolverine. That, you know, they put out so much Ghost Rider, they started calling him Guest Rider. You know, everything was Ghost Rider, Wolverine, Punisher. You know, it's like, and then DC had all the Death of Superman and Death of this and blah, blah, blah. You know, it was just a good time for comics. And of course, with anything that goes up that huge, there's always you got to come back down. So the mid-90s, late-90s, then you got all the crash and then everybody trying to run around and have, you know, genius concepts of why it didn't work and stuff like that. Just other than just pure greed. You know, companies were just putting out garbage and, you know, here's the Kiss Me cover and here's the, you know, Jello cover and six variations of this. You know, it just got ridiculous.
Yeah, it was like the era of the special cover, everything.
Oh God, it was everything. And we all took advantage of it. Everybody, the creators took advantage of it. The retailers took advantage, the customers. I'm sure you guys have flipped a book or two that's been signed or foiled boarded or what are they calling these things? They look like they put in the plastic coffins now.
Oh, they send it off to for grading.
For grading.
The CSG or whatever, which I think is the most ridiculous thing I ever heard of, but that's fine.
Well, you put it there, you
can't read it.
Right. What better way to enjoy a comic than looking at it on your wall?
It's sealed forever. It's like the, you know, it's like the Emperor's New Clothes of comic collecting. I've never Art seen anything like that. Exactly. And what do I want these big, huge plastic things? They're ridiculous.
That's why you got to buy two. It's like you send one to get graded and have the other one just to read.
Yeah.
But, you know, I find the grading interesting. You take these things and you buy a number one whatever, Howard the Duck off the shelf, okay? And then you send it to get it graded, and then all of a sudden it has a price of $2, and because it's graded now by them, it's $200. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I just think it's like the Emperor's New Clothes. I think it's one of those bubbles that's going to burst eventually when somebody says, this is stupid. Yeah.
And the grading thing seems kind of arbitrary to me, too. Probably, you know, depending on who's grading it, you know, it might be different. I don't know.
Well, it's really weird because I have friends that have sent them in. You get a grade. They will actually bust them out of those things and send it back and get a different grade sometime.
I've heard that happen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're not satisfied that they got a 7.8 and then it comes back as a 9.0 or something. Okay, well, you probably got with a different grader that thought a different thing of it. I don't know exactly how it works, but I think it's just arbitrary, like you said. But hey, as long as people are making money with something, it will continue to go. The bubble will burst when all of these plastic coffin guys get start hurting for money or whatever reason, and you get the wave of people that are now trying to sell something from a particular era, and they find out that $200 is $20.
Yeah.
That's all somebody's going to give you, and then the bubble bursts. That's how, if you look at the cycle of anything that's a collectible, usually all the people that are pushing, like you keep telling me, if I buy these baseball cards, they're going to be worth money. Okay, so people are buying. So then when that wave of people that bought them gets old enough that they want to sell them to send their kids to school or whatever they were investing for, they find out it's just not true. And then the whole thing falls apart. Then people move on to something else. You guys probably don't remember Pogs. Do you remember those?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Pog thing was crazy, and the money they were getting, and all of a sudden it just busted.
I never understood the whole Pog thing because I'm like, it's just a thing that you just
wasn't even plastic, wasn't it cardboard?
Like,
I don't know.
I was like,
it was like they had plastic ones and cardboard, but it was just kind of a fad that kind of came from the from Hawaii and the West Coast and stuff. And it just hit all the conventions for a second. It just died because nobody, when people went to try to sell it or trade it, or kind of like those Magic the Game cards, there's been a million waves. You know, Pokemon cards. It's always something that somebody, you got a blue dragon. That's worth $50.
Still trying to sell my pet rock. He keeps in the living room. So
nobody. They always say there's a buyer for everything. You just have to invest the time to find it.
So
how did you guys start your podcast?
Well, kind of like the way you started your comic book shops. It was a kind of a mutual love for comic books, and we were like, what can we do with that? And we thought, oh, we'll start talking about it. And,
yeah. So basically we were like, we don't get to see each other that much. Like, hey, why don't we, we start a podcast. We could talk about stuff that we like, and that way we could, get together more, and it turned into this.
Yeah. Cause when we'd see each other, we talk about comic books anyways.
Yeah.
So why not record it? Right.
So is your end goal just to have a little fun and be entertaining, or are you looking to start broadcasting everywhere and pick up advertisers and the whole nine yards, like grow it like almost like syndication type of thing?
Yeah, our goal is pretty much to reach everybody. By the way, I'm the special guest who never left. That was, I came on episode 5 and just, I'm Fonzie.
He just wouldn't go away. Yeah, okay.
Hey guys, just remember Fonzie took the whole show over.
But we want to reach as many people as possible.
See how far we can take this thing. We've had a lot of fun doing it so far. Going to conventions and
meeting some amazing people and talking to them. It's been pretty fantastic. So,
well, I tell you, if I was to just be honest, as my observation of you guys, I've met a lot of guys that do. Newsletters and podcasts and stuff like that. And a lot of them, come off as just kind of jerky. You guys have a true, it just seems like a friendly passion about what you're doing, and that it's all just about, having some fun and talking about what you want to talk about. And I think that comes across good in anything you're trying to do. And I think with that, with your personalities, I think you'll find it easy to get, guests for the show or subject matters for the show. People will be happy to participate in what you're trying to do.
I appreciate
that.
If you're putting your face in these shows and stuff and going to these conventions and walking right up to people, I think that's going to be your strong suit.
Yeah, that's what we do. I mean, it depends on the creator. I have to say, and this isn't just blowing smoke, but, You are one of the friendliest creators I have ever met. You were nice to my family, which you didn't have to be. You were nice to these guys. And nobody likes that.
I know, right?
You're a cool family.
Like you said, we've kind of taken the approach where, we'll ask people that we're interested in talking to, and the worst thing they can say is no. Yeah. So,
Well, I'll tell you something Larry told me when I first got in the full professional side of the business. He said that you're going to be shocked by the people that you've grown up with and you love what they do and stuff like that. He said some of these people are jerks and assholes. So I always thought Larry was exaggerating until I started meeting some of these characters. I'm like, you walk up to some guy and I'll keep it confidential, but say you like creator A on book A and you walk up and you're like, oh wow, there he is right there. I'm finally going to meet him. You walk up and it's just a jerk, Oh, I'm only signing one or I don't have time for this. Or you ask about your podcast. No, thank you. I don't do podcasts or something. You're thinking, wow. Some of these guys do not fit when you think about the fun of the comic industry and us growing up. Just the nerdy stuff that we like, watching cartoons and the movies and toys and stuff. They don't fit that personality. Somehow it's just like, how did this curmudgeon get into such a, fun filled kind of thing? But hey, who knows? Some people don't have any social skills.
Speaking of growing up with toys and comics and things, what comics and we deal with all kinds of pop culture here too, not just comic books. What were the things that you were most inspired by or influenced by?
I probably was more influenced by just straight literature, mythology type stuff. You know, I liked all the typical pantheonic god type stuff, the Greek gods and the Roman gods that you learn about in school. That was always fascinating to me. But as a comic guy, both my brothers read comics in the early days. I had two older brothers, so there was always a lot of comics in the family. Now, we were more Marvel heads. Later on in life, I started reading pretty much everything, you know, and probably a lot of that is when you get a comic shop and stuff like that, you can pretty much collect anything you want.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But as a lean, if I was to go like with, you know, that 10, 11, 12, 13 age type of thing, pretty much a hardcore Marvel guy. I mean, yeah. Spider-Man, yeah. You know, Spider-Man, Thor, like probably the mainstream characters, what I was really into. Avengers, Iron Man. I mean, I still collect, you know, I have everything, you know, so it's like, you know, I live it and breathe it. I love comics, you know, I love movies. I go see everything. It doesn't have to be comic related. I go see ridiculous, stupid stuff, from the kid stuff to the art films to the foreign crap, you know, anything. I just like the escapism of anything where somebody with any kind of creative talent has tried to put out what they think. You know, you get a snapshot into somebody's eyes, and some of it, in your opinion, can be terrible. Yeah. But you have to admit that guy or that woman still put a whole lot of time bringing that movie to the screen or bringing that book to print or something like that. It just isn't your cup of tea. So I think artistically, we're very judgmental as to, oh, that's no good. Yeah. Well, it's just not your cup of tea. You know, maybe you're not a Cowboys versus Aliens kind of guy. Yeah, yeah, maybe yeah. You're a more of a,
I'll be the first.
You know, I'll so like I take everything with a grain of salt. You go look at it and it might not be that entertaining, but I still say, hey, it was a, you know, a couple hours of escapism or whatever. You know, I watch TV. I do it all. I'm constantly, I need constant stimulation. I'm like a child. I probably have ADD or something.
I'm in the same boat with you. It's constant. I have to do something at all times.
Yeah, just whatever. Yeah, read, watch, listen. I like music. I do it all.
I will sit and watch a movie that I know I don't like, and I'm going to continue not liking it, but I'll watch it just so I can watch it to the end.
Yeah. You have to see what happens.
Yeah.
But isn't it the worst that you have kind of like a couple little favorites? And I mean, you might even have the DVD and it can come on TV and you're still sitting there watching it.
Like it's Braveheart, Gladiator, Shawshank Redemption, Friday. There's just these movies.
Oh, God, I love Shawshank Redemption. I love Shawshank. That's one of my favorite movies. You know, every time it comes in, The Fugitive, Tombstone. Yeah, so, you know, you watch the
Tombstone. That's right.
I mean, I've watched Tombstone so many times. Like, you know, people will call me up and we do this thing where somebody will throw out a line. Oh, I'll be your Huckleberry. He's like, you've got to finish the line. I'm like, we are super nerd.
My favorite throwaway line from that is, I ain't sorry and I ain't your kid. You take sorry and shove it up your ass.
I love all those movies you just named. I mean, haven't you ever done something where you are into something so much that you say to yourself, you have like a little blink for something. You say, damn, I'm a nerdy guy.
Yeah.
Hey, what can I say? My saying is, someone's always said, you're a nerd. I'm like, well, what's the difference between a nerd and a geek? And I tell them, nerds get laid. So, you know, there you go.
That's a good lie. Hey, nerds rule the world now, man. Right? That's not, you know, nerds are running every major company and everything. So it's like, what the hell? I never had that problem growing up where a lot of people would talk about, you know, hiding their comics in their books or, you know, I never cared about that, man. I was a big super nerd and I did just fine as far as popularity or women and all that, you know. You just be yourself. Who cares, man?
Right. Exactly, right?
Enjoy what the hell you want. You know, you look at you. You ended up with a good looking wife and a nice looking kid, man. Gee, that your nerdiness didn't stop you with anything, did it?
See, there you go.
You just got to find a girl that likes nerds. Exactly.
That's it.
I found it funny that you mentioned Shawshank, because we've had a conversation about Shawshank and
Sam doesn't like it.
Sam doesn't like it as much as the other two. And so I bring it up frequently as being such a great movie. And
yeah. And so when you brought up Shawshank, I'm like, oh, are you serious? Am I the only one? Why am I the only one?
I thought it was brilliant, you know?
Yeah, right, yeah.
No, like, I get it, but I guess when it comes on, I'm not going to stay and watch it. I'm like, all right, I've seen it. I get it. I'm just going to keep turning it. Now, if like Tombstone or Flash Gordon or even, what's it? Soul Plane comes on, I'll watch it all day.
Oh, man, you're killing me.
This is why.
So which Flash Gordon? The one with Sam Jones? Is that the Flash Gordon you like with Max von Sydow?
Yeah, of course. Is there any other one?
That was great. He got all that Buster Crab stuff. Did you guys watch this movie? They were practicing this thing. I can never think of the name. I think it's called Equilibrium or something. It had Tay Diggs and they were doing the gun kata.
Yes. And no emotions and everything.
Yeah, that was a great movie that nobody knows about.
Bale's in that movie, yes.
I love that movie.
I haven't heard great things about it. I've been wanting to watch it. Yeah.
This movie is awesome because basically
we're adding it to the list.
It's basically it's a world where you can't show any emotion or everything. And if you do, basically you are killed. And Christian Bale probably one. This is probably a little bit before American Psycho, but it's a pretty good action flick. And you'll definitely like. I have it. I'll let you guys borrow it.
Yeah, a lot of people haven't seen that movie. You know, it's like it's just one of those movies. I think people that are into that particular genre of action or fantasy or something like that, or you know, futuristic worlds. I think it's a good addition to that particular genre.
It's a very good cult classic, and
because it came out around the time the Matrix did, right? So it had the bullet time type deal.
Yes. It was just a little more lowbrow than the Matrix. The Matrix was very flashy, and you know, this one was a little more slow. But it was a lot of good action though. Did you guys like Excalibur?
Yes.
That was good stuff.
That's bringing back memories right there.
Yeah.
So what's your feel good movie when you were growing up? What's the first thing that popped your cherry on the fantasy type stuff?
Oh gosh. Oh, well, I was 4 years old when Star Wars hit. That was it.
Yeah.
Huh? And now he's got more other things. if we're talking like just, I don't know. The first movie that I remember going to and seeing in the theater other than a Star Wars movie is actually my friend's dad took me to see Rocky III when that came out.
Oh, that's funny.
And that movie sticks with me. So if that comes on, it's like, oh, it's like all the nostalgia.
Let me see. Rocky III, that was Dolph Lundgren, right?
No, Clubber Lang.
Mr. T.
Clubber Lang. Okay, that's right. Yeah, that's there was two Apollo Creeds, then a Clubber Lang, then Drago.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm slipping.
Yeah, probably Indiana Jones, like Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, that's not really fantasy, but you know, I have really good memories with that too.
Indiana Jones had me in the first commercial when I saw that big rock come down. I was there. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah, exactly. And I just found out recently that Temple of Doom was a prequel to Raiders of the Lost Ark. I didn't know that either. If you look at the dates in the beginning of the movies, it happens before Raiders.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. They didn't seem like they promoted that much.
It blew my mind when somebody told me that. I'm like, that's not true. And then I went and looked, and sure enough,
there it was.
There it is.
Somebody just told me something today that I didn't know, that those M. Night Shyamalan movies like Split and Invincible and all those movies, they're like all part of the same universe. And they're Unbreakable. So they're going to do another one now where Samuel Jackson's character, Mr. Glass, and it's going to have Bruce Willis, and it's going to have the guy from Split and some other people in it, you know?
That was the big reveal at the end of Split, was Bruce Willis's characters on the after credits. And that music was hitting, and I started to recognize what the music was. It still didn't dawn on me, but I tell you, I got chills whenever.
Yeah.
Because I loved Unbreakable. I mean, I had friends who hated it because it was kind of slow.
It is kind of slow. But at the time, that was probably like one of the best superhero films,
Yeah. It was slow, but when you think about how he rolled it out with the big reveal of the villain looking for the hero, that was brilliant.
And it was early enough where, you know, people weren't used to the M. Night Shyamalan twists.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was brilliant. You know, I thought that was a really good flick.
What was your nostalgia movie?
My first movie that my parents let me go see, I walked up to the theater, and I'm way older than you guys, so this is going to be the reveal, was Planet of the Apes, 1968. Nice.
Wow, man.
Charlton Heston. I got to walk about a half a mile to the theater, and I thought I was big time. I had $3 or $4 for some popcorn, and I was ready to go. And that ending, realizing they were on Earth and stuff, and the Statue of Liberty, I mean, that really just stuck with me as like revelations at the end of the movie, like surprise revelations. You know, you think about the stuff that you see at the end, you know, even like, you know, to go back to Shawshank, to know that Andy dug that hole and it was behind those big posters all that time. That was those big reveals at the end. That's the kind of stuff I really like. You know, I don't care if it's, you know, Darth Vader, I'm your father or whatever. Whatever is going to tell me something that I didn't guess right up in the beginning, I kind of like that.
It actually goes back and makes the movie better the second time you watch it, knowing it.
Exactly. I don't want to always just figure out something. You know, it's kind of like when they started entwining like the Predator movies with the alien mythos that the Predators were actually using the aliens as like the, you know, the passage, rite of passage, you know, you kill an alien and you take, cut something off with the acid and then make some markings on your helmet or something like that. You know, that was just some cool blending of properties. You know, I like when they do things like that.
Took a long time before they finally put one of those movies together, but man, it's nice to see that though.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes things seem obvious and they don't do it. Like for me, like when I was watching, did you guys all see Justice League, obviously?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Do you remember the flashback scene when they showed the big war of like the all of them, you know, fighting, you know, Darkseid's people. And then they showed like a alien Green Lantern. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought in that battle scene, when they showed the guy with the lightning, I assume they were saying that was Zeus.
Correct. Yeah.
But I think they missed the chance to show some kind of old wizard or something. And you see like a early Shazam, you know, back then, you know, the Merlin times, or even Ichigan, the demon. He would have been around back then too. They could have threw in a lot of obscure characters that would have really gave people like, wow, look at this. Look at that. You know,
that's probably one of my favorite scenes from that movie, actually.
It was, but you know, the movie in itself, it all seemed kind of cobbled together to try to catch up to Marvel, and Marvel has been rolling this stuff out for 10 years now.
Yeah.
That's always the thing. I thought DC missed the boat because Marvel would do the individual movies team, and it seems like they wanted to do the team first and then do the individual movies. And I want to care about the team.
Well, it's like, it's a rush to compete, and it's a rush to get the, a piece of that box office pie. And you know, these people cooked up a pie. They went out and picked some apples peeled them and cut it and spiced it up. DC just wants to just throw a big old pie, some old store-bought pie in the oven and cook it real hot.
You want some pie?
You're right. You want some pie? You know, it just doesn't work. And it showed. I mean, there were some brilliant parts. Like I thought the Superman thing, watching the Flash run
Flash, that's my
favorite. And the Flash looked at him like, what the fuck? Yeah. that was pretty brilliant. That was subtle and brilliant, you know?
Yeah.
But for the most part, I thought it was a big miss. You know, I thought, you know, there was so much more they could have done.
Yeah. I agree. I really wanted it to be successful too. Cause I like those characters. I love those characters. You know, it's just, even though like, I think all three of us are more Marvel fans than DC fans, but you still want to see, you know, that doesn't mean we don't like DC characters. You know, we grew up with a lot of those characters. Yeah, right.
You really, after a while, you realize that everything successful in this business, when you have a good Star Wars or a Pacific Rim or any of these movies that propel the genre further, helps us in what we find entertaining. You know, the more these things make money and the more the creators are rewarded for the efforts, there's more books for you to read, more toys for you to buy, more TV shows. It all kind of feeds each other. So if you get a couple of these to really do bad, big bomb stuff, they will stop making this stuff for a while because it goes in waves.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I hated stuff like, you know, the rush to do like the Inhumans TV show. That was awful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was one of the things where I had to finish watching it because I started it. But yeah, it just.
That was painful.
It was painful. Yeah. It was painful.
I could tell when the trailers were painful that I was not watching it.
Yeah.
It was pretty painful. And I'm getting that impression a little bit of the success of Daredevil that each of the Netflix shows that comes after it, it's almost like they're stretching them for no reason. They feel like six episode shows that they're trying to stretch to 10 and 12 episodes, that's, you know?
Amen. That is exactly the way I feel. And I felt that way about, like, my favorite of the Marvel shows, I think, is Luke Cage. And it still...
It dragged there.
The first half of that season
was amazing.
Yeah.
And I didn't care about their big bad.
Yeah.
I wish it would. Their bad, that last bad guy was horrible.
When they killed Copperhead, that was when the show was like, nah.
That was like shocked because he was so good.
He was so good.
Yeah.
He was really good. But that the bad guy that came after him, he looked like he had on one of those V costumes. Yeah. The soldiers, the regular guys from the V TV show, it looked like he went on a Hollywood set and they just cobbled together some guns.
Even he was trying to cosplay as a V character. Right.
Yes. I was like, wow, this is terrible. And I thought Iron Fist was boring.
Yeah. And I was really looking forward to like an Iron Fist series because I really like that character. That's one of the characters I really like. But
think about this, though. If you did an Iron Fist movie, wouldn't the first part of the casting be, I want a kick-ass martial artist?
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
I don't care who I get, but he's got to be a kick-ass martial artist. And this guy was like,
horrible. Exactly. I mean, it wasn't even believable, you know.
Some of it looked like the Texas Ranger. Walker, Texas Ranger. You know, where they just kind of everybody knows a little karate.
Yeah. It was. And, you know, and he's supposed to be like a master of the martial arts. And it's just,
And if you didn't believe that, he told you 20 times during the show.
Right.
No secrets there. I'm from Clun Lun and I'm the,
protector of Clun Lun.
And I don't get it because like the Daredevil fight sequences are amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, those are great. I enjoyed that, the Punisher, it was slow, but it was brutal, like a Punisher comic at the end. I mean, some of that, the killing and the fight, like when he dragged the guy's face across the glass and made him jigsaw. That was painful.
You have to take that show, I think, in little snippets because if you binge watch that, you get a little bit depressed, maybe a little bit at the end. Yeah,
that's true. It was really depressing. What's your favorite cartoons? Or cartoon movie, whatever. Gosh.
Of all time, it's hard for me to pick one.
Yeah.
Okay.
A few of them.
Apparently, I watch a lot of Rick and Morty. But if you go back,
I just watched Coco with my son.
Oh, yeah.
I heard that was good. I haven't seen that one yet.
I liked Transformers the movie as a kid.
As a kid, G.I. Joe, Transformers, and to a lesser extent, He-Man.
Did you like Iron Giant?
I watched that with my kids. It was a really good movie, but I didn't watch it when it first came out. I caught it much later. I'd missed the original Iron Giant party, but it was a good movie.
I was always kind of a Toy Story guy, the original Toy Story.
All the Toy Stories. Oh, my gosh. We talked about this one time. Like, Toy Story 3 at the end.
Yeah.
When he's giving away his toys. Like, I can't watch that without getting a tear in my eye.
Yeah.
I feel terrible.
Is that the one with the crazy bear?
Yes. That's the one with the crazy bear.
That was a creepy one. Yeah. That seemed like that give kids nightmares.
Yeah.
Mine
that bear was like a Wilford Brimley kind of creepy.
Right? Yeah, he was for real.
I think my movie was with Akira, That was like the first anime that I ever seen. And then
that was good stuff.
And then there was this one movie that I always remember. It's called Star Chaser.
I remember that. Yeah.
So that was my first, like, I was like, this movie is pretty awesome. When I'm going to the theater, I think I remember going with my dad. He took me to go see that.
You know,
that was good. That was good stuff. Yeah, I do remember that.
The movie I like a lot that I wish they would remake, and I think it's ripe to remake, is the movie The Black Hole.
Yeah.
I think they do that one. Because, man, I loved that as a kid.
Yeah. The little
robots. If I remember, that was a Disney comedy.
Yeah.
Have you watched it recently?
It's no, dark.
It's pretty dark, right?
It is not what I remembered.
Yeah. It's pretty dark, and a lot of people die.
Yeah.
You know, I got a creepy movie for you that I just watched again. The first time I saw it, I thought it was a pretty good concept of time travel. But then I watched it again. It has a real creep factor. It's The Time Traveler's Wife.
I haven't watched that yet.
Yeah, I've never seen that either.
That's with Amy Adams and Eric Bana.
Oh, okay.
I'm familiar with it.
What it was, he's traveling. He's a jumper, basically. He's not even controlling it. He just disappears. But the creep factor, when I watched it again, it came in that when he first met his wife, he met her. She was 9 years old.
Yeah.
So he's basically been a lecherous creep through time, waiting for her to grow up. So he's cruel, basically, you know?
Or something, if I remember. Doesn't he always like shows up like naked, or he loses his clothes? Yeah,
naked. Yeah,
that is
so. You're like a creeper through time.
You know that with time travel, and you have to be naked. It's like the Terminator thing too.
They never really talk about that, but they always say they give you the Cliff Note version. Is only organic things can travel through time.
But you know, cotton, like you know, clothes made out of cotton or whatever, that's organic, right? I mean, I don't know. Maybe
if you want to be technical, but that's they said. You know, I read some synopsis of the Terminator. That's why they had to be. Why didn't they just send a bunch of Terminators back? That's why they had to have skin around.
Yeah.
You know, because the only organic, you have to fake, but how do you fake time? Like, you don't see that there's a robot underneath the
That's right, yeah.
Do you guys like any of the new TV stuff, like the Arrowverse with the Flash and Green?
I've not watched a lot of the Arrow. I watched the Flash. Flash is my son's favorite superhero, so I haven't watched the latest season yet. We kind of binge watch it when we do, so.
Yeah. It's getting a little more corny.
Yeah. I'm a Black Lightning guy.
Yeah, I've liked Black Lightning so far.
So
that's
the only problem I have with Black Lightning is it going to be anything but black stuff? Is it going to be anything but his wife, his kids, and that one black gang, and that one black high school, and that one black police captain? Just like, come on now. Can we get some
superheroes? I think they're just trying to establish like an area, because basically, what was it? Season 3 or 4 is when Mr. Terrific actually shows up in the like Arrow universe. Like, it's the one black guy. Oh, well, the first season, but you know, it just kind of
right. You know, obviously, I like to see black stuff and stuff, but I still like it to everything that makes sense. You know, I don't, if there's going to be some diversity, let's have some diversity. But then when you give me something black, it ain't got to be all black. Everybody's eating chicken and watermelon and we down south and we singing spirituals. I mean, sometimes they just go so black. It's like, okay, they're going to really love this. You know, that's not my worldview. I mean, I see, you know, it's all, everybody's universal mixed in with everything. So that's the way I'd rather see it.
Speaking of mixed in with everyone, I don't understand why they kept that separate from the Arrowverse and Flash.
I don't understand that either.
It seems like a missed opportunity. I mean,
even if he's in a different city, I'm fine with that. But he still should know, you know, when the cops are talking about it, they say, damn, you know, we're getting like Central City or whatever, you know.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll establish that next season if there's a next season. I don't know. Yeah, you're right.
And the only thing he gets to fight is a big old albino.
Right. And I'm just keep wondering, like, he's a pretty sizable guy as far as Black Lightning. So it's kind of hard not to know I mean, you just got a glasses on. Like, how do you not know that's my like, not like a that's person, gonna be what you pretty need. Much a big guy. It's like you kind of got.
That's Superman Clark Kent suspend.
I think at least with Superman with the whole glass, but it's just kind of weird though, you know? It's like, really?
It is. Especially coming around your own daughters and stuff.
Seriously?
And you didn't recognize her, you just whooped her ass. And then you bend down and say, hold on.
So no one's going to ask questions? I'm just going to start talking.
Right, that was a little weird, but you know, I don't know. You know, you always look at all this stuff, and I think you three as a unit, you've probably looked at something and said, if I could have been on this for a minute as a consultant, I could have made it a little bit better.
Yeah,
looking at you, Justin.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's the case with most creative things. I think sometimes. I always wonder when they do these big properties, why don't they have a contest and you're going to invite 100 of the baddest nerds from the comic shops and stuff. And you just got them look at your first draft and say, what would you guys do to this movie?
Solve a lot of problems, honestly.
I think they could really chop it up and clean up some of these, like sometimes just these horrible things that you think, okay, that wouldn't have happened or that was stupid or whatever, you know, like there's no other way they could have saved that character or, it's kind of like I remember when I saw that first Superman when he came back with the new guy, the Superman now. That did not make any sense that Superman couldn't have found a way to save his father from the tornado. Without revealing himself. Yeah. Like he couldn't have went backwards and dug under the ground. Whatever the hell. Like, okay, I'm just letting my dad die so nobody knows I'm Superman. That didn't make a lot of sense.
Why couldn't he just gone and save the dog?
Exactly.
Why does dad have to sacrifice himself?
Why did Kevin Costner say, no, I'll go get the dog when you know your kid's Superman?
Yeah, he can get caught up in the tornado and live. And or probably has a dog with him. We'll just pick him up a couple miles down the road.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff. Like, they do a few stupid things like that that doesn't always make sense. Like, you know, I remember the first couple seasons of The Flash. Everybody knew he was The Flash. And he was revealing it to anybody and everybody, but he wouldn't reveal it to the girlfriend.
What?
He wouldn't reveal it to the girl he loved. That didn't make no sense. He goes, hey, baby, I'm the Flash. Yeah.
Girls would have been probably the only person I revealed that to.
Right, yeah.
Right. And don't think it's going to be fast. Well, there you go. Exactly.
I can be slow.
I will vibrate, though.
Okay, Flash.
Right.
Showing my vibrational powers.
So what's your next show on you guys' horizon?
There's one coming up in Columbus. I think it's in July.
July.
Yeah.
That we might go to.
Is that the Wizard World?
It is a Wizard World. We also actually do have a
Youngstown Comic Con.
Yeah.
We're hosting a panel with Jim Steranko there.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know the guy that organizes that con, so
okay,
you know, we kind of have a little in.
they're.
I was very surprised the first time I saw Steranko how short he was.
Really?
Yeah.
I've only seen pictures of him. I haven't met him
because growing up with his artwork and the way he drew, he just seemed bigger than life. So you always, not that it makes any kind of consistent. Like it makes sense, but I always thought, oh, that's going to be this big dude, you know.
So, you mentioned earlier that you know you meet some people who are just a holes or whatever. What about creators that are the opposite, where you met them and they just exceeded your expectations and how awesome they are?
A lot of good situations like that. You know, I have a lot of people that I've met that are still friends of mine. I can call, and I have a very unique. Probably very unique position in the industry, having been out of it for a long time and still maintained a lot of the friends that, you know, current and because I'm the type of guy, even some of the guys I didn't know that I see and I like their stuff, I'll just find a way to contact them, tell them who I am and just say, hey, I like your stuff. And sometimes that turns into what you guys have probably found the same thing with your podcast. It just ends up you have conversations with these people. Facebook kind of levels the playing field and being able to contact people, you friend somebody, you know, you don't got to be a stalker. You send them, you know, I'll just send them a message saying, hey, Hey, my name's Todd Johnson. I used to do a book, blah, 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 blah. I like your stuff and blah, blah, blah. Sometimes it turns into a conversation, you know, and then a friendship from there, you know. You know, I'm not bothering you every two circles. Hey, can I send you three books in the mail? Have you signed them? Right. You know, I really do just want to make comments on the creative side. You know, if I see somebody's art that it's like, if I read a story, it's just straight kick ass or a movie or something like that. I just want to contact the people. And a lot of times I just find it interesting how easily you can just reach out to somebody and start talking to them.
So,
you know, because I guess most people like to hear that you like their stuff for the most part. You know, they don't want you calling them every other day. And, I saw on Facebook it's your birthday. Where are you guys celebrating? Yeah. You know, just be friends with people. Just regular dudes, you know. And I keep a lot of, I keep up on a lot of stuff, just what people are doing, just having conversations with people.
Speaking of stalking on Facebook, I saw a lot of stuff on your Facebook about Tribe 2018.
That is our intention, to release a new tribe towards the end of the fall. We want to do, we want to pretty much put together all of the old stuff, the four issues and all the prequels and pinups and stuff we did. Cause a lot of stuff never really even saw the light of day where you might have done we did a cover of like Arena magazine or a cover to different distributors magazines. There's stuff that people never saw. So we want to kind of collect all that together and do kind of a graphic novel.
Nice.
You know, or what do they call them? Trade paperback, not a graphic novel. And then we're actually working on some new stuff now. But what I have found with the pacing of what you can do when you were 28 versus what you want to do when you're damn near 58, all of a sudden, you know, it's not the top of the priority list when you got a wife and kids and the house and job and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we're clicking right along. Some of the stuff that you see is some of the new stuff. And, you know, we keep, you know, giving little teasers and stuff. But the business has really changed as far as sales and distribution and what company to get with or self-publish and stuff like that. So there's a little bit of learning curve figuring that all out too.
Yeah. What do you think about the industry now? Now it seems like, you know, things are going a little bit digital at times. How do you feel about that?
I think digital is not the way to go. I think you have to offer it, but I think this is a tactile business. People need to hold it in their hand and flip it open and collect it and share it and stuff like that. I think the digital, think about how often you go and read a digital magazine or a digital newspaper versus just, you know, if you want a magazine, you want to read something, you just go buy it and have it, you know,
exactly. Hold it in your hand. The feeling of flipping pages is way different than flicking a screen. You know, it's.
I'm old school. I still want to have something in my hand and I want to be able to hand it to somebody, you know? So I think it has its place for people that are on the go. I mean, there's definitely an audience for that, but I think you're never going to get away from paper. That's just my opinion. I don't think this is an industry that needs to get away from paper. I think the collector side of it and the sharing side of it has always been a strong side of this business. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You know, or just do what you love. I love it. So that's what I would do with my creation, but I don't judge anybody. You know, some people want to go all digital and all that type of thing. I think you should go wherever you think your audience is. You know, some of the younger people with the anime driven stuff and, you know, their whole audience is more tech savvy and they want to read it on their smartphone or their tablet and stuff like that. So you got to do what your public desires.
Yeah, I guess
that's definitely the, you know, first rule of marketing is sell them what they want, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah, sure. I agree. Yeah.
So, I mean, figuring out the business is, it's a lot more expensive to do things now, you know, and it's a lot more political as far as what shows you can get invited to and things like that. You know, if you've noticed with a lot of the big shows, you just see the same guys be invited as special guests all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard for you to break in to get that huge convention audience, you know, the whole like the Wizard World tour or something like San Diego or C2E2, everything that's being produced by this company called Reed Pop. They control like C2E2 and the Emerald Con and New York Comic Con, things like that, or the Mega Cons or you know, Heroes World. It's hard to break into those that circuit.
Yeah, it is. I was aware of it.
And that's what, and that's really where you could get in front of, I mean, you go do New York Comic Con, you can get in front of 50 to 100,000 people all in one weekend that are all straight to your genre. They're trying to buy comics. And so you can really compete as to, it's kind of like, would you rather run an ad in what was the old school Wizard type magazine, or would you rather just run an ad in People magazine?
Right.
Your People magazine ad would just get lost. It would seem like it's going to millions more people, but nobody would even be paying attention to your ad. That's not what they're reading People magazine for.
Not catering to your audience.
Right.
Yeah, you kind of, you know, comics are a niche audience, and you got to find what's the best way to promote to that niche. And it's very hard now. You got all these people crowding everything with the crowdfunding things. You know, there's somebody every day, you guys are probably getting 10 messages of somebody wanting you to donate to their Patreon or their
crowdfund. Yeah.
So after a while, that stuff just starts blending in the background. No, I don't want to just send you some money of something I've never seen before.
Yeah, right. It just becomes background noise. Yeah, right.
Or creators I've never heard of, or a comic I never heard of, or something, some artwork I don't particularly like. You know, they want you, oh, just send me $10 and I'm going to send you a comic, and it's going to be, I'm going to send you a poster and a t-shirt. Well, I don't even want the comics, so why would I want the additives to go with it? You know, so it's a hard nut when you're competing with thousands of these people out here. Like, if you think crowdfunding is the way for you to go, and then, you know, if you want to put out a comic right now, is it in your budget to, you know, you might have other people to talk to, your wife and your kid's college fund or whatever, you know?
Right.
It's just different, you know? So you really got to plan it out, I guess. What is your plan? And, you know, what, really come up with a business plan before you just strike out there. And I think a lot of people just love it so much, I just want to do it. But they don't really plan it out to figure out, how am I going to actually succeed at this? You know, it's not as easy as we all think it is.
Right. You have to make it sustainable.
Yeah. Was it always your goal to get to the point to where you were writing a comic book, or were you, do you have more of an interest in just writing in general? Or?
I just like writing in general, to be honest. I write about whatever I'm thinking about at the time. You know, I did, back about 3 or 4 years ago, I wrote a book about sex, actually, that was pretty funny. And I put that out, I self-published that, and ended up selling about 50,000 copies.
Was that book Nasty As I Am?
Yes, yes.
You know what? Because I want to read the tagline that I got from Goodreads.com in my most...
He did a bit of digging on you.
Big of digging. The taste of confession of the true fan of women in these pages, the way they think, act, move, smell, and taste drives him crazy. So I'm glad, you know, I was like, I got to probably get this book. You're on the cover of it. I'm like, look at Todd. He's on the cover of it. There. Move.
I guarantee you, if you guys buy that, download that book, and I guarantee you, if you go and find something in there that you laugh at, I will pay you $50. That book came out of a dare of my wife and my family, friends and stuff, because I'm always talking shit about this and that, and I can write about anything. I'll do, you know, just when you get into... Everybody starts drinking at your house or something. Everybody starts bragging about something. I said, shoot, I'll write about anything. So it's kind of like, oh, write a book about sex. I said, come on, for a grown man, sex is like the easiest thing to talk about. You know, so they said, okay, but you got to make it funny. So I said, okay, I'm going to write about a book of like a young coming of age kind of story of like, you know, a man's first experience. You know, when you're a young man, the first time you saw a woman's breast or your first kiss or first sex. And so starting to write it, it was just hilarious. You know, to me, it was hilarious. So maybe I'll just send you guys a copy. And if you don't think it's hilarious, I'll pay you $50 anyway. But I was surprised how many issues it sold, because it once again, it just comes back to marketing. My daughter shot a video, you know, and We laughed about the video, you know, we started spreading the video out on YouTube and stuff. And I started a website. I launched a line of clothing called Nasty. And so So before anybody even saw the book, I was selling nasty hats and t-shirts and all sorts of stuff. So then I started doing the book tour just like comics. I went and did the Harlem book show. I did the Tampa book show. And all I did is my daughter's a model. So she knew all these photographers that made, you know, going to take pictures and make you look like $1 million. So, or the best that you can look, you know. So I had her style me and go get some clothes at the mall, and we took some nice pictures, and I threw it on the book, and I found that middle-aged women would come up and buy my book. So it worked out really nice, and I you learn how to write your own press releases and stuff. So if you Google like Barnes and Noble reviews and stuff, like almost all the reviews are good.
That's good.
Nice. Yeah.
So I laughed all the way to the bank.
That's right. There you go. Well, yeah.
Yeah. So when I found that, I was like, oh, I have to ask him about it. I'm looking at the tagline. I'm like, look at this, man. On the cover, everything. I'm like, you know, you're doing pretty good when you put your face on the cover.
Mm-hmm. Trust me, of all the people who told me to put my face in the book, it was, of course, my own mother. she was like, well, if you write this book, nobody knows who you are. So how's that going to help? You know, I said, Mom, nobody's going to know that. Well, put a picture on there and maybe some of the ladies might like it.
There you go.
So she was right. I mean, you know, there's millions of people out there. A few ladies can find something to like, you know, all of us are quite snazzy to somebody.
So did your mother read this book?
My mother actually edited the book, and it's such a hilarious. I have to send you a link to this video of my mother's review of the book because she thought everything I wrote was disgusting, but she's a retired school teacher, English teacher.
Oh, okay.
So it was just natural for her to edit it. And so I'm saying, Mom, you're editing this book. It's all this stuff you don't like. Well, I wasn't really reading it like that. I was just correcting your grammar. So there's a really funny video out there. We actually put that on YouTube. My mother, I mean, we used everything. Nothing is sacred,
awesome.
You know?
That is awesome. Yeah.
This is a family. Hey, sell. Whatever sells. Keep it moving. So, you know, part of in the book on the tagline, it says that, you know, Johnson just put out this erotic tale of coming to age and his next book is a children's book. You know, so that's such an odd. Because that was the next thing I was working on at the time. We got this perv that's putting on a children's book.
Or you could spin it like, hey, in order to get to the children's book, you got to go through here first.
There you go. That's one of the things. We sold this t-shirt. We only sold probably 1,000 of this limited edition t-shirt that was called Born in Vagina. You know, and people at these, you know, when you're at an outdoor book show, you're there with people selling science fiction books. You're there with people selling the romantic books, you know, the Harlequin type stuff. You're there, a lot of people selling religious books. And here you are talking about nasty as I am. You know, so you get the eye rolls and you're disgusting, but then you get a lot of the curiosity to people. Some people think, you know, hey, I'm gonna come over and talk to this guy. You got a nerve to put a book like that. And then you get the people to just like it. You know, you three guys could stand up there and sell anything. You guys could come out with your own cookbook. And there's a certain amount of people that are going to walk up when they look at you three. They don't even care what you're selling. They're just going to look at you and say, what the hell are you three guys doing? They go over there and then it's going to be you that sell it. I don't care what it is. If you're a cookbook about your favorite sandwiches, there's going to be some people that are going to buy it. Just because you ask them to and they want to support you because, you know, it is what it is. Yeah. So that worked for me. You know, traveling. You know, if I get in front of people, I like talking to people. So, you know, I'm going to sell you something. Somebody's going to buy something. You're playing the odds. You know what I'm saying? It's like if you ever, did you ever go to clubs? You know, maybe you're going to try to date a woman. You go to a club and there's 200 women in there. Now, come on now. If you play your odds, you can't find a couple numbers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That's what it's like selling anything. If you put yourself back to kind of like coming full circle back to what I was saying about the big shows, like some of these independent guys don't realize that, yes, you might only be able to afford the small shows, the shows that are close to you, but you're going to at some point have to make an investment of yourself and be confident enough to know that I can swim in this big pond in front of all these people that are floating by. Yeah, they might be there to see Jim Lee or Stan Lee or whoever, but they still have to walk by your table at some point in the show. So you're playing an odds game. Yes, you paid more to get there. Yes, you paid more for a table. But are you confident enough to know that you could still sell a small percentage of those hundreds of thousands of people? And that's what the marketing's all about. You know, if you want to go mainstream, you know, go big or go home, you know?
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, hits on something you talked about earlier, is make something that you like, something that you're proud of, and then you can just convince others to take that investment a little bit easier than...
That's pretty much what it is. I mean, it starts with, you know, if one of you guys came out with something and the other two don't like it at all, then it might be a bad start. You know, can you switch gears? And like a lot of times you see properties being sold and say every book you put out doesn't sell. At some point, do you ever ask yourself, hey, let me try something different? Or you just keep trying to shove that down my throat? I mean, there's so many things that, you know, if you're a writer or you're an artist or whatever, there's so many things you could create or so many things you could draw. Change directions, move in something else. Maybe aliens aren't your thing and monsters are. Maybe monsters aren't your thing and elves are. Whatever. You know, there's movie directors that do the same thing. They come out with a movie that bombs and they come out with a different direction, you know? Try to do a war film, it didn't work. The next one, they come out with a love film, and all of a sudden, they're up there trying to get an Academy Award.
All right, yeah, we had some minor technical difficulties there, but we're back. So, I think we got cut off. You were talking about Electronic Musical Festival that you...
Yeah, that was just something I do once a year. You know, first week in August, we go Electronic Music Festival. It's mostly like techno and, you know, house music, anything dance related, all DJ driven, like three stages of DJs, but, you know, food, liquor, the whole nine yards. A lot of fun.
Nice, nice. Yeah, Detroit's kind of known for that, right?
Yeah, Detroit is like the birthplace for techno. Techno was created here. Matter of fact, one of the guys that's, you know, part of our festival is the guy that created techno. guy named Juan Atkins. So it's always funny. You know, I do all the marketing for the festival, and nobody ever knows where I get some of this stuff, or they don't realize I'm swiping from comic books and stuff. Nice. One of the flyers was a swipe from Amazing Spider-Man 600, and... I had Larry Strowman do a poster a couple of years ago, you know.
That is awesome.
They don't know. You just kind of cross-pollinate this stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Maybe one day I'll give a big electronic music festival with a Comic-Con right in the middle of it.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
You have lightsabers and glow sticks
going. There you go. I mean, hey, all the people are there already. I mean, why wouldn't a couple comic cars be able to sell some t-shirts and whatever? Yeah. It kind of fits. I mean, some of the people that are into the whole electronic music scene, they look like they're cosplaying too, with the big furry boots and
shirts and all that kind of stuff.
So it's like, hey,
anime character or something. Yeah.
Somebody dressed up as a character and fit right in.
Yeah.
So I know you started back conventions, and you were, but you, I know you did some before. So what's the craziest kind of things you've seen out there meeting fans? Not necessarily from your fans. Maybe you just happened to see.
I mean, the craziest thing, to be honest, is like, you know, people want you to sign their breast and all the usual stuff you get even in the music industry. You know, it's like, you know, you meet a lot of strange people. We did a show down in some city at the same time they were having a Star Trek convention. And there's all these women dressed up as Klingons, speaking Klingon and stuff. That was bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, and then anytime they blend genres, sometimes you would do like a comic show, sports show, and the sports people don't want you there, and the comics people don't want the sports people there. So, you know, so odd mashup sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of dedication to like a fandom that requires somebody to learn a whole new language, like Klingon, that's
impressive.
It is. For real.
I think the cosplay sometimes impressive, the amount of detail and work and money spent on some of these costumes some of these people create. It's amazing.
Oh, it is. Yeah, for real.
I mean, full, I mean, just full everything down to the shields and the chainmail. I'm like, wow, you had a lot of time on your hands.
Yeah, you're getting that intricate detail for,
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is.
But probably the funnest, probably the weirdest thing, we did a show in Long Island and Todd McFarlane was there. A few other creators, and they ended up moving us probably three times for such odd reasons. And I'd say this is the only show that kind of smacked of racism a little bit to me. We set up and the crowds were like huge. And then all of a sudden the guy giving the show said that, oh, we were too close to the other creators' lines and making too much noise. So I said, that's what everybody's doing, but that's fine. Gosh. You know, so they moved us down a little ways further. Then maybe an hour after that, they came over and they said, well, a lot of the dealers are saying all of your line is blocking their sales of their stuff and stuff, which I think is ridiculous because if people are in front of your table, you should be able to sell them something,
right?
But, you know, whatever.
Oh my God.
So then they moved us right into the mouth of the loading zone, right next to the trash cans.
Oh my God.
And we were like, you have got to be kidding. Everybody always thinks I exaggerated, but what's funny is my wife was at that show, so I had her take pictures at each one of the transitions. So I have these pictures of us at the mouth of the loading dock. So, you know, by then you're getting kind of like, you know, kind of just angry about the whole thing. And I can remember standing up on the table and just hollering, hey, why are you people here? And they were like, tribe. So you get it. I got all these pictures, all these people holding up the tribe book and stuff. And we're getting people all riled up. So at the end, the convention guy was saying how disruptive we were for his show. And that the only reason we even had people in the line is we were getting the spillage from Todd McFarlane's line. Oh, man. So I'm like, okay, we're getting the spillage, then why did everybody always had our book? You know, I was like, why are we getting the spillage, but everybody else had fans? I mean, it's just bullshit all the time.
Wow, yeah.
It's all, you know, you get a lot of bullshit in this business, you know, for whatever reason. You know, people don't want you there, or people do want you there, but they don't want to treat you like you're important to the thing because they're more important. It's, you know, you just got to find your way, man. You know, find your way through any obstacles. You know, it's like a game of chutes and ladders. Mm. You know, just, you know, find your niche and keep doing you, you know, find your customer. Cause, you know, everybody at these conventions is not going to be your customer. You know, some people are going to pick up your book and think it's ridiculous or stupid or it's you know, not well done or whatever, you know, but you know, you'll find your way. You'll find who wants you and connect with that person and devote all your time to that, not trying to please people that don't even like what you're doing. And we just found, at least back then, I don't know if the whole hierarchy of who's important has changed now, but we just found that there was it's very tribal, to use that name, right? You know, in that they only wanted certain people. We're always, you know, awarded all of the accolades and the, like, it's like reading the issue of Wizard magazine. If you take the first 25 issues of Wizard, the probably covers were all done by maybe four people.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all the articles were pretty much done by about three companies, but yet you're talking about your magazine about comics.
Yeah.
You know, but you're really not covering anybody but these same guys, same things, same creators, same creations over and over and over again. It's kind of a stacked deck in this business. And I don't know if it's still like that, but it still seems like that. When I look at the conventions and I look at who gets the attention, it still seems like it's, you know, top 10 type of thing. But hey, you know, find your way anyways, you know,
for sure.
Find a crack, stick a finger in there, work your way inside. And I'm not sure. I'm not going to tell you what that analogy connects to.
That's a quote to advertise with.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I'll get that tattooed.
And we had a podcast. We don't know what the hell that guy was talking about.
That just
needs
to be a motivational poster.
Right.
Fuck yeah, stick your finger in a crack and then work your way inside. That's the May quote.
That's the one takeaway from this whole podcast.
Do you guys ever get up to the Motor City
Con? Yeah, I have.
I have not.
That That convention would probably be right for you guys to do a lot of interviews and stuff. It's like, you know, really creative too. It's I think in May.
Okay. We might have to look at that. Yeah.
It's pretty heavily creator driven. It's pretty close ride, you know.
For sure. Yeah.
So we're staying at your house.
You guys are welcome to come by my house. I'll cook you breakfast and everything. I didn't tell you I own a catering company too.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I cook all the time for extra money. I do people's funerals and weddings and everything.
Wow.
Now you would never guess the funniest business that I'm in. My main business is I run a nursing home. I own a nursing home.
Really?
So I deal with old people all day long. Nobody ever guesses that one, but it's a family business, third generation. I've been working there since I was 14 years old. So that just kind of like, it's just in your blood.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So tribe was created sitting at a desk surrounded by a bunch of old people.
Wow.
All the tribe storage and all the, you know, Larry came up there and drew at the nursing home. It's actually a funny sight.
Yeah. Huh.
So, was there World Cleveland? Are you and Larry going to make more appearances anytime?
Yeah, we're doing, I think our next show is in Charlotte at the Heroes Con.
Awesome. Okay.
And then we're going to do the Baltimore Con. I know Larry's, I'm not going to San Diego, but Larry's the special guest at San Diego this year.
Nice, yeah.
And we have a few more coming up that are just kind of not fully confirmed yet, but we kind of, you don't want to start getting all conventioned out before you put, you know, it's kind of like putting the carriage before the horse. You know, you really need to concentrate and actually creating something instead of just touring.
Right, gotcha, yeah.
I learned at Cleveland that I was not all that interested in sitting there, you know, selling the book from 1992, you know. I mean, it's fun. It was cool to be there and stuff, but I really would like to have something new in my hand. I mean, I've been hawking that book for 25 years now. And I didn't think Wizard World would be having me sitting there selling my nasty stuff. So that was really just my peek at coming down to see what it's like now, you know, just kind of immerse myself into what's going on and how the fans act and all the other creators act and just, you know, just what shows are like, you know, it's pretty much the same, you know, you gotta have a little enthusiasm and a little, you know, be in a good mood and stay hydrated and stand on your feet all day and do your thing, you know. It's a fun business. So that's it in a nutshell, fellas.
Hey, good stuff.
But serious business. If you guys want to come to Motor City, I will show you the city.
Oh man, we might have to take you up on
that. I could probably, if I meet you at the show, I could probably introduce you to a few of the creators that are going to be there. I know they're going to be there.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Yeah.
And yes, I'm going to send you some tickets to Electronic Music Festival in August.
Oh, man. Nice.
That's always fun.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Then you can have, you know, then I can offer you free booze and food and stuff like that, too.
We always find
booze sponsors pretty similar to what I was telling you about your show. You know, you have to show your demographics and stuff like that and say, hey, don't you want your vodka or your beer or whatever? So we always find, you know, last year was Miller's, year before was Budweiser, Red Bull always sponsors. You know, we had Pepsi 1 year. You know, you always can find somebody that wants to be in front of your target market.
Yeah.
You just have to convince them that, you know, there's synergy here. This makes sense for you, you know. Makes sense for you and makes sense for me. And like I said, sometimes they're not always going to give you money. Sometimes they're going to give you product. We had 2 years ago, Converse sent me 50 pair of gym shoes for all the DJs. So I stuck my logo on them and stuck them on the DJs, and it was just cool, you know.
That is cool. Yeah.
Everybody had on some black Chucks with my Charivari logo on it. So that was just, you know, cool. It was free. The DJs say, oh, that was really great, you know.
Sweet.
It all works out.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you for being on our podcast. You've been an exciting and wonderful guest, and we've all enjoyed having you here.
Absolutely. We got to learn.
It was my pleasure, and I'm honored to even be invited to come on. If there's anything I can do for you gentlemen, feel free to reach out. I know some other people that you might be interested to have on there.
Absolutely. We're interested in having anybody that you might know.
Okay. Well, let's line that up.
All right. That sounds great.
Matter of fact, maybe what you guys should do is send me, 10 or 15 name wish lists. If I, you know what I'm saying? If I don't know them, then I'm gonna wrangle them for you. It's easier than you think.
Thank you very much.
I could be your show wrangler.
Yeah, and anything that you want us to promote that you're working on or anything too, by all means let us know and we'll reciprocate any way that we can.
All right, let's plan on it, guys. Let's stay in touch.
All right.
Sounds good.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thanks again for
all here and have a great evening.
The technical problems we had. I apologize.
No problem. No problem. I understand.
All right, good deal.
All right, I'll be in touch.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.